Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is the award-winning children's book author and illustrator Jeffrey Hayes. Hayes is the author of over 40 books, including the popular series Otto and Uncle Tooth Mystery Readers, which has sold over 1 million copies. He is also author and illustrator of the classic Bear by Himself and many beginning reader adventures. His current projects include the award-winning series of easy-to-read comics toon books featuring the lovable mice Benny and Penny in such adventures as Lights Out and Just Pretend. In 2010, Hayes won the prestigious Theodore Seuss Geisel Award for his second Benny and Penny book, The Big No-No. I'm speaking to Jeffrey Hayes by phone from his offices in New York City. Jeffrey Hayes, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
It's so good to talk to you about your wonderful work. Now, you know, I want to begin at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your early influences and what got you interested in illustrating and writing.
I guess my early influences were just a lot of mass culture, such as movies, comic books, anything that was very prevalent when I was growing up in the 50s. And that includes little golden books, which we had many of. And I think because of that, maybe, I've always just had a very wild imagination. So I knew that if I was going to write anything, it would probably be fantasy or science fiction or something that's a little away from the norm.
Mm-hmm.
I started out wanting to do comics, and then by the time I became an adult, comics really weren't at a place that sort of fit with me because I wasn't that big into superheroes. I certainly had no desire to draw superheroes, and those were predominantly what was being done in the comics medium at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I segued, it seems sort of very natural just to segue into doing children's books because I had grown up with them and loved them. And it just seemed like I sort of just forgot about comics, put that on the back burner, and started focusing on doing children's books.
Did you ever think that you just wanted to be a fine artist? Because you really are a really good artist,
as well as
a good writer. And I was just wondering, did you ever think about just being a fine artist?
No, not really. I think it's because primarily, if I would have to say what I am, I'm a storyteller. So whatever I did would have to, you know, have some sort of narrative to it or some sort of storytelling. So in that sense, no, doing fine arts never appealed to me. Not that I haven't done art pieces. I certainly have. But just as a profession, it just never felt like it would be that satisfying for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. And do you recall the first book that you actually put together and did that book get published? Do you remember?
You mean of my professional books or just books I did before getting published?
Yeah, when you decided you wanted to be a children's book writer, did you ever put together a little book?
Yeah, I did. I did several that I did not sell, although I sent them to people. And one was a version of this Christmas rhyme, Christmas is coming, the geese are getting fat, please to put a penny in the old man's hat. And I did that with geese and a fox. And it was, you know, quite lively and nice, but it was a good portfolio piece. And then I think I did several poems I had written, children's poems, and I tried illustrating those. What had happened was I was working actually in New York at an architect's firm doing interior design. And I got laid off with a lot of other people at one time. And I thought, well, great, this is the first time in my life I've ever been unemployed and receiving unemployment benefits. So I thought, well, let me just spend the next few months and really get my portfolio together. So I did. And I went around to a lot of publishers in New York and all got really good responses. But it wasn't until I met the woman who is now my agent, Edith Kroll. She was at Harper, and she was the first person who was not only liked my stuff, but was willing to go the extra step and actually work with me to get a viable book together.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you write stories first and then illustrate? How do you work in regard to these pieces and books?
It depends. I would say I probably do them very closely together. Often I usually start out by doing quick little thumbnail sketches with little notations next to them. And often when I draw a character or a situation, words or dialogue will just pop into my mind. So I'll write a little notation on that. When I've got enough of that, I'll start forming the story Now, I have one of the books, which I believe you saw that I did recently, called A Poor Excuse for a Dragon. That one was different. That I wrote totally just the text. I didn't even want to think about pictures because I just wanted to, almost as if by the time I got to illustrating it, I wanted to approach it as if I was illustrating somebody else's text.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think because I've done a number of readers, it was easier because I knew what I was doing. I knew the territory I was in, and I knew what the language would be like. So that was a different experiment for me. I've written some longer books earlier in my career where I just started out with just the text and then added the illustrations later, but usually it's pretty organic.
Uh-huh. So they come together. Well, tell me about your connection with animals. Your little characters are so cute.
Oh, thank you.
They're partially realistic and partially not. And how do you divide the difference and decide how you're going to portray?
Oh, I think it depends on the text. I have one story that I haven't found a publisher for it yet, but it's a story about a little bunny who's hiding Easter eggs. And that, the illustrations are fairly realistic. I mean, it's a real bunny. There's nothing anthropomorphic about him. Mm-hmm. It just looks like a real rabbit. And that worked just for that story. It just felt that's what I needed to do. I also have another story about a dog and a cat I'm working on that is, all again, these are real dogs and cats, even though it's a fantasy story, but they don't have clothes. They live in a house with their master. I think it depends on the type of book. I like drawing both kinds. I like drawing the more cartoonish kind of animals, but I also like drawing more realistic ones as well.
You know, I have found, I'm a big cat lover, as you probably know, and you are as well, and it's so hard for artists to portray cats, and I've always thought because they wear their souls outside their fur coats, you know? it's so hard for people to portray those spirits.
Yes, cats are difficult. They're much more difficult than dogs. Dogs are easier to draw, and it's different now if I'm drawing my cartoon cats. I have this little cat named Elroy I've done some books about, and Elroy he's sort of a cross between a rag doll and a cat, so I can give him a lot of cat-like qualities, but he doesn't really look that much like a cat. But I agree with you, if you're trying to really portray a real cat, it's difficult, you know.
They're hard to capture, and I don't know why. Every artist I've ever talked to has agreed it's really hard to capture them. Now, let's talk about the fact that you've segued in recent years from picture books to illustrating children's comics and toon books. What made you decide to do that? You're going back to the beginning in some ways, huh?
Yes. Well, that was sort of a very fortuitous thing, what had happened, as about 6 or 7 years ago, I was really fed up with what I was doing. I wasn't enjoying the books, and I had totally lost all of my initial joy. And so, and my books weren't selling well, not the recent ones I had done. So I just stopped. I just stopped for a few years, and I spent that time doing actually more fine art, doing portraits, doing individual paintings just for myself. And then I also was starting to put down a lot of my own ideas that I had been bouncing around in my head for years and working on them mainly just for myself, doing sort of like portfolios and writing the stories, but not with any goal to publishing them necessarily. And around that time, it's funny, I had spoken to my agent and we were saying, well, what are you going to do and et cetera. And I says, oh, who knows, maybe at one point I'll do beginning reader comics for kids. I said, somebody's got to do it. And within like 6 months or maybe less after that, I got a call from Francoise Mouly, who is the art editor of The New Yorker and very famous in her own right as an editor and an illustrator herself. And she was putting together a series of books of comics for kids, beginning readers. And her husband, Art Spiegelman, said, well, the very first person who got a call was Jeffrey Hayes.
Wow, Spiegelman, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was quite nice. Now, I had never met Francoise or even Art Spiegelman, but Art knew my brother, Rory. They were good friends. And they also, I found out later, had some of my books when their kids were young, and they would read my books to their kids. And the ones they had were ones that I had done that they were regular books, but they had a slight comic format to them. They had balloons over the characters. So that's how they knew I could do it. And so we spent about maybe 2 years just developing the whole, not so much my book, but the whole concept of the Tune books.
Oh, and they're great, Jeff. They really are. Those Benny and Penny books, you know, you sent me several of them, and I read them, and I've handed them off to some of my friends who have kids, and they're great. How did you come up with these two mice?
Well, I had done one of my portfolio pieces that I had sent Francoise, had two little mice in it. It was a slightly different story from the first one I did, Let's Pretend. Similar, but a little different. And when Francoise and I were talking about a subject, I said, you know, I've already got these mice characters. Maybe we just want to, you know, do that. And she thought that was a good idea. And my original names for them were Tyler and Bella.
Ah.
But when we started, because these are readers, we realized certainly Tyler was a little too difficult a word. So we wanted something a little simpler. And we were tossing ideas about, and I liked the name Benny. Actually, my best friend Paul Squall's father's name is Benny, so I thought Benny's good. And I think I had called it Benny and Bella. Mm. And then Art Spiegelman came up with Benny and Penny, which actually I think is the best because it really is, you know, it's got some...
It almost rhymes.
It rhymes, yeah, exactly. And both the easy to... read. Mm-hmm. So that's where we came up with the names of them.
Well, tell me, so these mice go on these different adventures in these different books, and do you always have to teach a lesson when you're writing children's books for this age?
I don't have to, but I think there's just something in me that, as a way of tying things up, I always have some little moral or lesson in it. Even some of my longer books or books for older readers, although they might on the surface be adventure stories, but I would always try to add some little theme to it. And what I like about Benny and Penny, and other people have said too, is that they sort of solve all their problems on their own. And we had made a decision early on to keep the parents in the background, so you never see their mother, you just hear her voice in balloons off screen. And so within this context of usually, of course, I mean, most of these books in real time probably take place in over maybe 15 minutes at most.
Yeah.
<know?
laughs> Yeah.
But in that, something comes up and they resolve it. That's sort of how that works. But I don't start out with what I'm going to say. I just start out with the story I want to tell. And then as the story develops and as I work with Francoise, the theme sort of emerges.
If you're just joining us, my guest is illustrator and children's book author Jeffrey Hayes. He's the author of over 40 books, including his current project, which is the award-winning Benny and Penny Adventures, featuring two very lovable mice. Now, Jeffrey, you know what I'm going to ask you, too? I've always wanted to ask children's book authors, do you have to worry about stereotypes and having male and female characters? How does that work in developing children's books?
Yeah, well, I'm very aware of that, and unfortunately, things have just gotten so horribly PC these days that, I mean, it gets to the point where there are things that everyone's afraid of offending anybody, so it tends to make books kind of tame. But I try, just on my own, certainly in terms of, I try to avoid stereotypes. Sometimes I hated to have to do it, but I had to put a bow in Penny's head just because, for young kids, so they could easily distinguish between Benny and Penny.
Yeah, and Benny has a B on his shirt.
Yeah, yeah, those are right, exactly. But I also, on the second book anyway, the first book she's dressed as a princess, so that was needed, something very feminine. But on the second book, I was determined not to put her in a dress, so she's wearing overalls. And there are things in the books that, yeah, I try to avoid the stereotypes. Sometimes it's a little hard because the truth is kids at that age do tend to fall into certain stereotypes. Mm-hmm. You know, there are just certain very boyish kind of things. In the latest one in Lights Out, I have Benny burping very loudly at Penny, and it's really something more of a boy is going to do, you know.
Yeah, and we could debate about whether that's cultural, you know, or,
yes,
or
exactly.
innate. But yeah, I understand what you mean. Nick, tell me, how do you stay in touch with kids' minds and getting into kids' worlds as an adult man and write these stories so that they will understand them?
Well, I actually don't have a good answer to that because there's just, for some bizarre reason, there's something in my brain that absolutely just clicks into the mentality and the language and sort of spirit of kids that age, as toddlers. And
are you telling us you're childish or childlike?
Yeah, right. I don't know. But the odd thing is, I mean, my toddler years were certainly not the peak of my life. I actually don't even remember much about them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, as I got older, like 8, 9, 10, there was much more going on and much more exciting things in my life. So I don't know why that is. It's sort of an uncanny thing, but I'm able to nail the voice, and I know instinctively what a kid that age would say or not say or what they'd react to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we do is we have our books vetted by a child early reading specialist.
Oh.
And so she goes over all of our tune books, and it's very helpful because there are just certain words that you'd think would be easy to read, but for some reason they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so she'll go over the books, and mine actually probably makes fewer recommendations on my books than on any of the other tune books, just because I am so used to speaking in that language.
God, that's amazing to me how you can do that.
Yeah, me too. I don't get it.
Actually, we're having an adult conversation about it, too.
I know.
Tell us what mediums you use for your artwork. Do you use pencil or watercolor? How do you do your drawings?
Well, for years I used pen and ink and watercolor, and I could never get watercolor to do what I wanted it to. It's a very tricky medium, and there are people who have really mastered watercolor, and I know who they are, and I just thought, oh, I'll never, you know, I just can't get this effect. And I also had went to a point where I was having hand trouble, and part of it, when I'm doing a painting, it's very easy for me to hold a brush in my hand for like an hour or more and not even put it down, you know. And so I just started, when I was doing my portfolio work in that period where I had stopped doing books, I would return to pencil, which is certainly the easiest to draw in. And I felt that it loosened me up a lot, and I was able to get more, just more feeling into the drawing. So what I do now for the last several years, I do my line work in pencil, and then I photocopy it onto another paper so that it becomes darker, almost like an ink, and then I do use colored pencil on top of that.
Okay, your little characters are so cute. What do you do with your original art? Because, you know, I've always been an admirer of children's book illustrations. They're just such beautiful, beautiful pieces, I think. Do you ever have exhibits of your
own
work?
Well, I have had my work exhibited. There's a Society of Illustrators has a show every year where they feature work from the children's books of that year, and I have been in that show. I haven't really had an exhibit of just my pieces, and I actually own most of them. I don't. Mm-hmm. I've sold a few, but it's right now there's just not a big market for that, just because of the economy.
Yeah.
You know?
I bet sometime there will be. That it's a fascinating medium. It's some of the best art being produced, I think.
Yeah, I do too, and I. Ideally, I would love to have a show of my work, and I'd love to sell more of it, you know, because then it just piles up. I mean, I've just got, you know, drawers full of art.
Sure you do.
Just sitting there, you know.
So since you've been writing for kids for a good number of years now, why do you think kids still respond to talking animals?
Well, I think one of the reasons I like about my animals is because they transcend race, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have what they are, cats, dogs, rabbits, but you're not really dealing with race, which you have in, you know, a book. And I know when I've done books with real children in it, I'm always very conscientious about, you know, including children of color in the books, because that's the society we live in, you know, and I'm not going to, I want my work to be genuine, so I certainly like diversity. But it just, when I do the animals, it's just something I don't even have to think about that, you know. And I think all children, they can just respond to they can project themselves onto the characters, mm-hmm. I think, in an easier way.
I think all of us can, you know,
mm-hmm.
unless we've gotten totally hardened by life, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think, but there's something, I am always been an animal lover, and I just, you know, I was living with a roommate who had a dog who I did not like, but I was still very kind to the dog.
That proves it.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorites of your books is Bear by Himself. When I first met you, you gave me a copy of it, and I treasure that. It's got such beautiful illustrations, and that bear is just amazing. But the book itself seems like a great lesson in telling kids that they can be alone to explore something that almost seems to be lost in this culture now. Don't you agree?
Oh, totally. And actually, I would love to have Bear by Himself reissued again, because I think it's true. I live in New York City, which is just, you can imagine, it's just very hard to find a place in New York where there's not noise going on. And I think now, especially with all the devices that everybody has, and everyone is so engaged, either visually or verbally, because they're on their cell phones, and there's this constant chatter and constant noise, or people will have music. You know, every place you go, you could go into a restaurant and have a quiet lunch by yourself. Well, not anymore. Every place they're blasting the music, or the noise level is very high for the acoustics make it very, the talk very loud. And I agree. I think everybody needs that quietness and that sort of aloneness and just sort of withdrawing from the world, just temporarily. You know, of course you go back to the world, but.
And that's such a great lesson. Bear by Himself was written in the mid 70s, right?
Yes, yes. Now, I don't know which one I gave you, because I've done two editions of that book. I did one with full-color illustrations and one with two-color.
I think I have the two-color one.
Yeah, that was the original. And I've actually done a third version, which I did for my portfolio, where I combined the two versions. And it's the definitive Bear by Himself.
I'm hoping that
one will be published someday.
Oh, I think they really should, because I think kids need to relearn that lesson and get back in touch with themselves and the world around them. It's a great book of lessons for today's kids. Tell me how high-tech culture has changed the nature of children's books. Has it?
It has. Oh, yes, definitely. One of the things that, in terms of design, because things are so easy now, I think a lot of books are over-designed. You know, this has been a problem for several years in terms of they could do anything with typeface and the fonts, and they just, so sometimes they go overboard. But I think more than that, because of this sort of quick culture we have where everything is very instantaneous, that a lot of the books have become very simple in terms of visually, and almost like they don't want, parents don't want to get books for their kids that they have to actually work at. They want, it's almost like a, it's got to be easy, it's got to be fast.
And they have to look generic, right, in some ways?
Yes, exactly. There's a lot of books that are very generic, and those are the, unfortunately, those are the ones that sell probably the best. And I just can't, I wish I could, but I can't do those kind of books.
Yeah, well, I'm glad somebody's still staying to the original intent, which is beautiful art and great stories and wonderful lessons.
Well, Francoise and I have talked about this, and it's just, even with all these e-books and everything, there's just something about holding a book in your hand, for a kid especially, and being able to turn the pages, and the comics medium sort of lends itself to that. Yeah, I mean, you can certainly read comics online, which I do, but it's not quite the same, because it's such a visual medium, and to have something very physical is, I think, very important. So we do it. One of our goals in the Toon books is not to make books the kids want to read, but the books that they will want to reread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense to me. That's what you hope for. You know, that's why they want to hold them in their hand. They can go back and look again, you know?
Yes, yes.
You know what I want to ask you, too, about? I know you do a lot of live events and signings and readings and stuff. What kind of questions do kids ask you?
Oh, well, they ask me sometimes very cute questions, depending on how old they are. This one, I was talking to a bunch of, I think, five-year-olds, pretty young, and they were very enthusiastic, and one little boy says, well, how do you make the cover? And I said, first I do a sketch, and then we work about getting the type on the cover, and then he says, no, he says, how do you make it so stiff? And they really think I, you know, produce every one of these books. So sometimes I get very funny questions. Probably the one that most writers get, the most common question they always ask is, where do you get your ideas? And it seems like the more and more, well, I have two answers to that. One is, for me, I don't know. They just pop into my head,
mm-hmm.
which is the most honest answer. Sometimes I get ideas from things around me, but most of the time I have no idea where my ideas come from. And the second thing, which is hard for kids to understand, that it's really not the idea that anyone can get an idea. It's actually what you do with the idea that's the difficult thing.
It's
where the real work is.
Yeah, I can understand that. I wasn't going to ask you where you get your ideas, because almost every writer I ask that says they don't know.
Yes.
It comes from the ether. It comes from the blue.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But I remember I had one idea for the Nightlight book, which I sent you.
Uh-huh.
I told my agent I had that idea, and I told it to her in like 5 minutes. And she says, "That sounds great. Write it up." You know. Well, 3 years later, I'm still working on this thing.
Really?
So it's like T.S. Eliot said, "Between the conception and the creation falls the shadow."
You won the Theodore Geisel Award for your second Benny and Penny book. How does that feel? Does it make you change your ideas about your own art?
It did. I think it did, because it took me years to get this kind of recognition. I wasn't someone who got the acclaim early on. And especially, I think I was very proud of this because it's the first graphic novel ever to win this award.
Oh.
And also because our main goal in Toon Books was to get our books shelved not with the graphic readers, but with our graphic novels, but with the readers, because this is what the books are. They're helping kids to read. And so it was a real vote of confidence for all of us that we had succeeded in that.
Oh, I think it's great. You won that in 2010, and congratulations for that.
Thank you.
We're almost out of time, Jeff. Can you tell us about any future projects that we may be seeing in print?
Well, I'm working on a graphic novel about a little girl that I've been working on for about 2.5 years now. I'm actually closer to 3, and it doesn't have a publisher yet. I know it's going to be a difficult sell, but I don't care. It's a real passion project for me, so I'm going to finish it regardless of whether anyone publishes it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe I'll do it as a web comic if that comes to it, but I'm definitely going to go ahead with it.
Oh, good.
And then I have a new Patrick book I'm working on, and that's
Patrick
actually...
Patrick the Bear, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 4 little books I had done in the early 80s. People loved them. They didn't do that well commercially, but when people got them, they just fell in love with them, and people have been begging me for years to reissue them. So these are all going to be reissued in one book.
Oh, well, that's great.
4 little books.
Jeff, can you give some contact information so people can get in touch with you real quickly?
Yes. Well, the best way would be to go to toonbooks.com, and that has all the Toon books. It has my bio. And then I'm certainly, if you go to Amazon, all my books, even from other publishers, are available on Amazon.
Well, that's great. Jeff Hayes, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great pleasure talking to you about your wonderful work. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.